Welcome to the Business Trend Center podcast, where we talk about trends and how to use them to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are, of course, Spark Partners. To learn about how to grow your business, go to our website and take a look at our podcast. Hey, Adam. So last week, I gave a talk to a bunch of biomedical engineering students. And this is a junior level, so they're approaching their final year. Got a lot of really good questions, and it kind of got me thinking about the commercialization process. So what I'd like to do today is I'd like to kind of frame up some things that I've been involved with in my day, and then just kind of get your ideas on how you see things post or pre and post your corporate days. I think there's a certain perspective that is a little bit different when you're wearing the corporate hat versus when you're kind of on your own. So does that sound good to you?
Sure.
All right. So many of you know that I have a company called Sciox that we're commercializing a technology to help people breathe easier that have COPD. And, you know, we licensed the technology from the University of Arizona. The inventor, his name is Dr. Sai Parthasarathy. And he came up with this idea a number of years ago. He saw a market need, kind of a hole in the space where there's these kind of big fancy machines that provide respiratory assist. And then you've got the other machines that are like, you know, CPAP masks and so forth. And they're kind of nothing in the middle. So we came up with this idea. We then got the license from the university and put the team together, raised a little bit of money, and are now marching forward with the commercialization of this technology. Now, one thing that we always keep in mind is you and I have talked in the past, Adam, is really looking at what trends are we aligned with. So the way I see it, we're aligned with three major trends. The first of which is when we talk about a lot is demographics. We've got an aging population. A lot of them want to stay involved and active in their lives. So that's right down the fairway of what we're doing. The next is with respect to remote patient monitoring and treatments at home. Those are all things that are growing and growing and growing. So, you know, the challenges that we face right now are mainly with capitalization as well as in regulatory. I think the first is going to help with the second. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, when you were in the corporate setting, Adam, what did you see as the biggest obstacles for a, we'll say, a medium to large company, 500 plus employees, to take an idea to the market?
Well, large companies such as PepsiCo and DuPont, DuPont's now gone, they have a real tendency to think of development within the markets where they already play. So if you're at Pepsi, you're in soft drinks and you're in snacks, and you're thinking, okay, how I've already got this customer, I have awareness, I have their attention, and I could probably slap the Pepsi logo on almost anything, and they'll drink it or they'll eat it, or the Frito-Lay logo. And you know, that's true across companies. Who's my customer? Tend to say, who's my customer? What are they buying? And can I offer them something that's very close to where they are so that they can just buy it from me? And that was really the development process, was trying to defend and extend the base. You know, what do we do to keep them, and what do we do to get them to spend 15 cents more? Whereas I think that I don't think that's a good process. I've been opposed to that process ever since I was there. I thought that it was better for us to go find things that people need and take those to market, and not just necessarily the people we already sell to, but in fact find an unmet need and then fill that unmet need. And so anyway, I think that's where why corporations are. I'm not fearful of them when I talk to entrepreneurs. I always say they may have a lot more money, but they're going to spend it trying to protect what they have. Now, if you think you're going to unseat somebody from a position, you have to talk about how that would happen, right? If you're going to go directly to try to obsolete an existing product of a big corporation, they're going to obviously not want to find their solution made obsolete, so, or their approach to business. But they really are terrible at knowing how to develop new markets.
But isn't that also the case for small and medium companies? I mean, I talk to companies all the time that seem to be firm on playing in their own sandbox.
Well, but there I think it tends to be more a matter of a technology in search of a market. somebody develops something and they said like, oh, there has to be an application for this. And so let's run around and keep trying different applications, hoping that we finally hit upon the magic application that everybody will want our product. Again, not a good process. I think the process is broken because it's an answer in search of a question. And so, but it's different. It's different than the big corporation, which is trying to protect those revenues. This one's somebody trying to find some revenues. Yeah. But instead of trying to find it by looking at it from a need basis, they're coming at it from a perspective of how can I get them to buy what I have?
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've learned in, you know, since my college days, 25 years ago, is the value of an idea versus the value of execution. When I was in my younger days, I thought the idea was it. You have a good idea and then that's it. You're going to strike gold. But now that I'm on the other side of all of this, I recognize that an idea is, while it's good, is nowhere near the value of having a robust market or market need and a robust team. You know, we talk about taking a C idea and an A team in an A market versus an A idea with a C team. Even in an A market, you still have to have that execution side.
Yeah, so we talk about doing this starting from the trends, right? Figure out an unmet need. And the reason we start with trends is, okay, if everybody's getting older and there's a gap developing with too many retirees and not enough people working, what are the needs? What are the needs of the retirees? What are the needs in the middle of the market? And if you're an entrepreneur, you go out to fill those needs. And as obvious as that sounds, it's just not what most people do. I had just a wild experience on this weekend. Unbeknownst to me, Mary Lou had bought a couple of tickets to a show. And she knows that I like live music quite a bit, and so she'd gotten a couple of tickets to a live music show local. And it starred with a band named Yachtly Crew. Okay.
Okay.
Never heard of this Yachtly Crew.
All right.
Have you ever heard of something called Yacht Rock Radio?
No.
Okay. I discovered this about 5 or 6 years ago. I was driving through the Mojave Desert between Las Vegas and L.A., and I had Sirius radio on. I'm thumbing up and down, listening. And there was this channel that came on, and they would play these 1970s and 1980s songs that were like one-hit wonder songs that were, you know, really popular, like Star, Rockets in Flight, Afternoon Delight kind of thing, right? And between the songs, they had these comedians that would tell these really weird jokes. And the whole thing was to appeal to people who were in their 50s and 60s, and it called it Yacht Rock Radio because it was as if you were in your 60s and you had some yacht that you were sitting on drinking, you know, a pina colada, listening to the oldies on the radio. And it was pretty funny. Well, this band came up. They grabbed this. I don't even think there's the station, if it's on at all, it's only on part time of the year, like in the summer. I don't know anything more beyond that. I don't even know if it's trademarked Yacht Rock Radio. But I didn't know who the demographic was. Well, this band was a group of five mediocre musicians. Okay, then I'm telling you, they were good, but they were good like I was good when I realized I wasn't going to make a living at it. It was kind of like, you can play the horn or you can do this, but, you know, no, you're not Stan Getz or you're not, you know, some fantastic person. And you're taught that music is about being a really good musician and being a songwriter and all this kind of stuff. Right? What these guys did was they literally got outfits made to look like that old show about Love Boat, like Love Boat outfits,
okay,
with hats, and they go on stage and they sing these moldy oldie songs. Now, they put 500 people into a theater that night. I don't think anybody sat down. They sang nonstop, and the youngest person there was 45 years old. I saw people 75, 80 years old dancing in front of their, you know, dancing in the aisles, dancing in front of their seat for 2 hours. This went on for 2 hours. And what struck me was these guys are making money. They're out there making money. They're not, now, are they, you know, I don't know any of their names. In fact, they said that their names were like Polly Shore and Danny Shore and totally fake names that they had. The whole thing was just a whole made-up deal. But what they did was they said, here's this aging population. Here's this demographic. They want to go out and have fun. And we're going to put on a show that's fun for people over 55, people over 65. And it was a two-hour sing-along marathon that these guys did. Now, that's thinking in terms of what's the need and how do I fill it, right?
Yep.
They didn't try to say, I'm a great musician. They didn't try to go promote themselves as, you know, good singers or any of that stuff. What they said was, hey, here's the demographic. These people probably, you know, you're never going to get these musicians. Most of them are dead. And the ones that aren't dead are either so famous like, you know, the Rolling Stones that you're never going to get them. And so we just go get these songs that are one-hit wonders so that they're no cost us hardly anything to perform on stage. And we put on this show for these people that come in. And that's the kind of thinking that I try to push towards entrepreneurs is like, well, what's the need? You know, where are we going with this? So let's do the same thing with the demographic, right? So we have today, we're getting a real shortage of carpenters and plumbers and brick masons and all that kind of stuff, right? And that's because historically, you know, the grandfather was a plumber, dad was a plumber, son becomes a plumber, right? But then we got this point where they sent the son off to college to be an engineer, and now there's no plumber coming along behind him, right? So we have a shortage of these things. So now that's all affecting construction. How do you go build a house when you can't get plumbers and bricklayers and carpenters and that kind of a thing? Well, then you have to start having robots that do it, or you have to start to think in a different way about how I'm going to get the construction done. But the same thing for DIY, you know, like if I want to replace a sink today, it's not hard to buy the sink, but finding a plumber that wants to come install the sink is a very different problem to try to solve. So what do I end up doing? Oh, if I want to replace the sink, it better come with a DIY kit that the dumb old me can go install, right? Yeah. It tells me how to give me a YouTube video that I can watch so I can see how to take out the old sink and how to put in the new sink. But we still have people out there in the construction industry that are trying to – they're not recognizing this. And I had a conversation last week with a fellow, and he said, you know, a lot of these 3D printed opportunities and, you know, doing container homes and manufactured housing, he said, you know, it's really not economic. And I just said, look, that's what they said about electric cars. It's not economic, right? The point is that people are going out and they're following the trends and they're doing things in new and different ways. And so, you know, if you're going to be in the construction business, where there's a housing shortage around the country, we keep hearing this, there's a housing shortage. You know, there's all these young people living at home still, and people that say, I can't afford a new home because it starts at $450,000 and it's just way beyond my reach. Well, this is where you start coming in and saying, wait a minute, we've got to come at this a different way, right? We have to come up with a solution that fills the need instead of trying to just go off and sell something that's already on our minds.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of needs out there. And I think what a lot of our listeners need to be aware of is it just takes that pause, that half step backwards looking at, okay, what are what do I see here as the needs? I went to, so there was a little train show that happens once a year here in Tucson where these hobbyists have these really cool trains that they display in their yards, or front yards or backyards. And we went to this like giant RV community. There must have been, I don't know, maybe 1,500, maybe 2,000 manufactured homes, a combination of manufactured homes and the big fifth wheels and even the Class A, which are like the big square or motor coaches. And we drove in there, and what I was amazed is how many motorcycles I saw, right? We've talked about this in the past. I would say out of every five houses, one of them had a motorcycle. Now, you compare that out to the rest of the world, you know, my neighborhood, nobody has a motorcycle because everybody is less than 50 years old. So, you know, anywhere you look, if you have a motorcycle dealership or if you have a motorcycle service, you shouldn't be knocking on my door. You should be knocking on their door. And even then, you want to be looking at what's coming down the road. I don't know if you've seen these slingshots and these other things, little side-by-sides that they're selling, or other technology they're trying to purport with, you know, the safety, these devices, that these vests that blow up and protect you in case you fall. So, I mean, there's lots of opportunities if you just look to see what people are buying.
Yeah, well, we talk about the end of the internal combustion engine, and people kind of like, okay, well, that's going to take some time. But the implications get pretty far-reaching pretty fast. You start saying, well, all right, if the number of cars burning gasoline goes down, the number of gas stations will go down. So there's going to be an opportunity there. What are we going to do with those sites, right? Those convenience store sites? Are they going to become electric charging stations? I don't know if that makes sense or not. But I would certainly be thinking pretty hard about it, because if it is, somebody's going to have to pull those gas pumps away. Somebody's going to have to pull those gas tanks out of the ground, and they're going to have to put in the infrastructure to get the electricity there to charge up the vehicles, right? So there's a transformation. Somebody's going to make some money transforming them. Some of those sites will probably become something else. Well, what could they become? What could you do? The prime real estate in many locations, you know. Right. What would you like to do with it? Would that make a good what? Obviously, I don't think traditional retail is the right direction to go, because electronic commerce is making the need for brick and mortar retail decline. But, you know, could these be good locations for, a daycare center for children? Or, you know, with these parents that are working and, got plenty of opportunities to work, maybe a daycare center that could be at a convenience store could be much closer than the way we do it today. So, you know, trying to figure out, look, there's a need. What do people need? And they're not going to need a gasoline. They are going to need electricity. Well, what else are they going to need, right? What is this aging population looking for? And same way with environmental awareness. What are people looking to do? You know, and how could I help them? How could I help them deal with having a better environment?
Exactly. So we put out this email in the past for those that want to get our report called Trend Report 2030, and we've had people ask for it. And one of the cool things about this report, it lists the top 66 trends that are in play right now in really the world. And it's just a matter of alignment of how many of those that you can actually align with. And the more you've got, the more that you'll have that downstream current taking you down the road, as we've talked about in the past with respect to a canoe, putting your canoe in the river of opportunity and trends versus the swamp of trends gone by.
Yeah, well, but even thinking about things like agriculture, right? We 100 years ago, you had a lot of small farms, and then the farms went away, right? So there's many fewer farms now; they're much, much larger. But then think about it: does that serve the needs that people have? In some ways, it did. We got to where we could produce vegetables, fruits, and vegetables year round. And we could get them, mass shipped with trucks and railroad cars pretty much anywhere we wanted to go. But now that we've got an aging population and this gap is developing, is there a better way to do it? Is there a better way? Instead of, today it takes a lot of water. It takes something like 100 liters of water to produce 1 liter of milk, because you have all the water it takes to grow the feed that the dairy cows eat, and then you have the water that the cow has to eat itself, and it's a long process, and it takes a lot of water to make milk. It takes a lot less water to make almond milk, right, and these other products. So you start saying, okay, there's this trend towards environmental awareness. People are thinking more environmentally, they're thinking about their diet. There's a trend towards taking care of the ecology, taking care of the environment, if it's better off to make a product using a lot less water. So instead of dumping huge amounts of water on the near desert of middle California in order to grow lettuce, where you dump water on the ground and it seeps in the ground and runs away, it's lost, you have to go pump more water out, and it's very water, it uses a lot of water to grow the products, and then having to use a lot of energy to get the product from California to anywhere else in the country. What if you just took a bunch of retail stores and converted them into indoor farming locations, so that you were growing the produce in Tucson or growing the produce in Chicago or Minneapolis or somewhere like that, right? It's sitting there trying to say, what are the needs? And those needs can be met in different ways by thinking about the trends. And you can start to say, hey, this head of lettuce was grown right here in Minneapolis in January. And, it's from farm to table. It just happened that farm was inside what used to be a Target store or what used to be some other kind of a structure, right? So it's looking at those external events and bringing together, we see the big jump, right? I never forget that Tom Monahan was the founder of Domino's Pizza. And when he founded Domino's Pizza, the pizza was, he never sold it as good pizza, ever. Right. But he did say that he would deliver it. It was, his focus, when he ran a Domino's ad, it was 30 minutes or free. Not great pizza. It was 30 minutes or free, right? And so it appealed to that one thing of, hey, you need this convenience. You want the thing delivered at home. And so I'm going after that convenience. which was a big thing at the time he did it in the 1970s and early 1980s. It had a huge convenience factor. Obviously now at DoorDash and a lot of other opportunities to fill that convenience, but he was pretty much alone thinking about that at the time. And that's what I try to encourage entrepreneurs to think about, is rather than thinking about a product or a particular product or service that you want to sell, or if you're a big corporation, instead of thinking about how do I try to keep people buying the crap that I've been making for the longest time, sit down and say, what is it that people really need? What are the gaps, right? What are the holes that are developing? If you fill that hole, like be the first guy out there with delivery, and you make that your, you know, delivery pieces, what you do, it's all about delivery, then you have a very good opportunity to make a very big amount of money.
Exactly. And this is actually a very good segue, Adam, to talk about a webinar that we're going to be putting in place in the first full week of April. We're going to be talking about how growth requires moving outside your comfort zone. And you know, I always tell the entrepreneurs that I work with that comfort is what holds us back sometimes from making all kinds of moves. I mean, we tend to not want to stretch or not want to do things that are going to make us uncomfortable, including but not limited to quitting your job or working those extra hours or whatever. You're outside your comfort zone is where that success and that realization lies. So maybe give us a little flavor, Adam, of the content of that webinar based on some slides that you and I have been discussing here.
Well, again, I like where you started with. It's our biases are built around our comfort zone. Our blinders are built around our comfort zone. If somebody tells us you're good at something, we try to do more of what we're good at, right? Or historically succeeded at doing. And so what I think we need to do is help people get beyond that, get beyond thinking of yourself in that very limited context of, well, this is what I've done or what I've always stood for. And move on beyond that considerably. We see people that are stuck in environmental situations, and because they say, "Well, that's where I'm from, and my part of the country does this." Well, change, move, go. find a way to get beyond that comfort zone. And I think if we can get people's attention to that for a little while, we can get them to see just how stuck they really are.
Yeah, what's interesting to watch is the big corporations as they struggle with these things. Like, we've used the example, and just to kind of tie back to an earlier conversation, the example of Harley Davidson. This is a very well-known, very highly respected brand that likely won't survive the next 30 years unless it makes some significant changes.
Yeah, well, again, the Hell's Angel sort of look. People forget, I think the original Hell's Angels movie was made in either the 40s or the early 50s. That's how old it was. And the people that are over 50 years old and are riding some motorcycle that's just way, way too loud, yes. Way, way too heavy, kind of a thing. Those people are dying, right? They're dying. And so if you're going to continue to move forward, you have to look around and say, what is it people look for in transportation? And what are the alternatives in transportation? So as you mentioned, there's some people out there now doing electric-powered three-wheeled vehicles, but they're different than a motorcycle is not very fun in inclement weather. If it's too cold or it's too hot, like in the desert, 110, or if you're it's raining, then it's no fun to be on a motorcycle, right? And you can't listen to the radio on a motorcycle. So people are coming up with alternatives now, three-wheeled vehicles that have enclosures on them that you can use them in inclement weather, and alternatives. And that's and a lot of them are electric powered now, right? They're looking at doing it that way. And so we're trying to say, well, okay, what is it that people want? Well, they want to get from A to B. And if you want to get from A to B, do you want to get there in style? Do you want to get there economically? What is it you want to do? And then looking at the world around that. So you say, well, okay, historically I wanted to have a vehicle and it took me to the grocery store and it took me to the airport and it took me to Aunt Sally's 185 miles away once a quarter and it took me 300 miles back home to my parents for Christmas, and but that one vehicle accomplished all those tasks. Now we're getting in a world where we're starting to think much more about, well, wait a minute, what do I really need a vehicle for?
Right.
Do I need it to go to the grocery store, or is that an Uber experience, right? Do I need it to go to the airport, or is that an Uber experience? When I want to go 185 miles, is there an alternative for what I would do? You know, is that something I want to drive, yeah, or is there an alternative way to get there? Ride sharing. 300 miles, do I want to take a car? Do I want to take a plane? So we're saying that the actual decision-making process about purchasing some kind of a vehicle that I would put into my yard or my driveway or my garage involves all of this panoply of transportation opportunities. And so, you know, you can't be Harley Davidson saying, I make motorcycles. In fact, they're so narrowly focused on very large, very heavy, very loud motorcycles, right? That sort of a focus is, yeah, obviously, you know, it creates that sort of existential threat to your business.
It does. I saw an ad the other day for their new sort of bicycle, electric bike, and I just kind of shrugged my head because it was Harley Davidson, you know, the leather and burnt orange sort of bravado, trying to stir up some activity in this sort of different space. I mean, it's kind of a hipster space. So they're using their might as the Harley Davidson to try to push something into a new market. But I'm not sure the people that are going to be buying want to have a Harley Davidson. They want, right, another brand that's clean, that doesn't have the heavy implications and the Hell's Angels implications like the Harleys do.
Yeah, the electric bike market's been growing for 10 years. And it, first, it wasn't very good because the batteries weren't very good. They were heavy and they didn't help you all that much. Well, now we have electric bicycles that they're a little bit heavier than a traditional bicycle, but they can propel you up to 50 miles. You know, you don't even have to assist them. They're almost like a slow speed motorcycle in that regard. So the batteries are much more effective. And they also have much better gearing systems. You know, you can have 10 speeds and different speeds on the motors. And so you can adjust the motor speed. You can adjust the gearing speed on the bicycle. And you can really extend the life of it out there. So that's 10 years of innovation. Right? 10 years, yep, of innovation has made the product a lot more interesting. But as you said, who's buying that bicycle? And people really have to sit down and start to think about that if you want to go into that space. Are you targeting older people? Are you targeting younger people? What's the application? Where are they going to use this electric bicycle? I have one. I've had one for 5 years, and I enjoy it quite a bit because what it did for me was it took the fear out of bicycling. I was always afraid at my age I would ride a bicycle and I would get down the road and I wouldn't get back. You know, yeah, like I bite off more than I could chew, and I would be, oh my gosh, I went too far. How am I going to get home? And I don't worry about that now because now I know I've got this electric power. And if I'm tiring out, the electric power will jump in, assist me, and help me to get back home, right? So I can enjoy my, I use it as an exercise device. I ride it to the market, I ride it around on a Saturday to go get some exercise. And it works really good for me, and I enjoy it. But it's not a means of transportation. Really, it's just an exercise device. But I see other people for whom it is. One of the things I do when I travel, Manny, and I think you'd wear this, is I go to different towns. I really pay attention to what I see. What do I see on the streets? How do I see people shopping? How do I see people driving? What are they riding? Are they riding bicycles? What are they doing? And, you know, the last 2 weeks I've been to 7 different cities, and I've noticed that I've seen electric bicycles in the streets of all of them.
Right.
And one of those cities was in upstate Wisconsin. So they had a little bit of a warm spell. They were all running around in T-shirts and shorts. It was 50 degrees. I thought that was pretty cold, but they were out there and they were on their electric bikes and they were going for bike rides on the electric bikes at 50 degrees because the snow had melted off and, you know, they could get back on the roadways. But when I start seeing that sort of a prolific use of a product, you really know you're onto something, right? You really know there's a trend happening there. And the question is now, do you understand who the customers are and why? You know, are you getting into what's the need they have and how they fill that need? I'm not going to be a Peloton rider, that's for sure. I'm never going to be that level of exercise again in my life. But this works for me. So there's an application, yeah, as an exercise tool. But again, it's a replacement product for a car for some people. So, but it's understanding that need that will make the electric bike manufacturer successful, not slapping a brand on, yeah, it like Harley Davidson.
And this that's is actually a great segue into that webinar that I want to invite. I'm inviting everybody to join the webinar. We'll be blasting out on our email channels here. If you have any questions, you can also email us and we'll put you on the list. But this webinar, you know, in getting outside the comfort zone, I want to open it up to folks to talk about their ideas. One of the things that I also learned in my 25 year, you know, of being out in, you know, my postgraduate time is that an idea, although you may think it's unique and amazing, is nothing compared to what it takes to make it happen, right? And so come by to our webinar, talk about your idea, talk about the market, and we're going to help you. Sometimes it's a little bit of tough love, but it's going to help you to really set your sights in the right direction. You know, I see a lot of half-baked companies out there. They're limping along. They're doing okay. They have like a gravitational pull to them that's not letting them launch. And so by all means, you know, be part of this webinar so we can help you launch, and then you can come back like many others have and thank us.
Well, again, entrepreneurs can spend a lot of money. They spend a lot of human energy, of their own energy, trying to launch a business. And then they hire people, and they hire people to help them, right? Marketers and PR people and engineers to help with the product design. They pay for distribution of the product. They spend a lot of money trying to get their business up and running, and we know that a lot of them never get there. And, you know, they could list price on our class is $1,000. And if you run your idea through our class, you will have a much, much better probability of success, because that class will force you to hone in on what are the trends, what are the customers, what are the segments, where are you trying to appeal, and how are you different. We force you through those in the 28 modules. Then you're either going to A, say, hey, wait a minute, I had a bad idea, and I'm going to quit, which if it saves you, if it keeps you from going forward with a bad idea, it's worth $1,000. Or you might say, well, you know, now I realize that I need to modify because I had a good idea, but it's a much better idea if I make this modification and I'll line up better with the trends. I'll be more successful. Again, that's well worth it. And sometimes it'll let you say, hey, I was close to the really good idea, but I'm a little off. There's the much, much better idea is over here. A totally different idea, but I see that idea now. Yeah. I see it more clearly. I see how it would launch faster, how the demand, the need is bigger, and therefore the demand will be greater and push you in that direction. So again, it's, you know, we spend a lot of money on things as business people, and often we don't spend on the right things. And here, just a little bit of money spent putting your ideas through this crucible that we have as a course, it will definitely pay for itself over and over, and you can use it, the class, over and over for every idea you have.
Absolutely. Great insight, Adam. 100% agree, and certainly looking forward to those that are going to be able to join the webinar in a couple weeks. We'll be blasting out in our channel, so please stay aware. And also, I'd like to do for next time, our next podcast, is I'd like to bring on Sydney King, who is part of our new show called Spark on the Street, where we interview growth-minded entrepreneurs and business owners to get their insights on what they've done to grow their business. So with that, Adam, have a good rest of the week, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers.